Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach David Bartke here.
It is Thursday, June the 29th, 2017, and we continue this week with our ongoing exploration of The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. We're up to chapter 4 called Powerful Processes. And David, you dug up a little thing from Abraham Hicks, which is kind of apropos because Abraham Hicks was supposed to be included in the original Secret.
Yes, that's right. I got a really good quote, and I thought I would share it because it kind of goes along with what we've been talking about lately.
Fire away. Yeah, let's hear what you got there and see what's cooking with Abraham Hicks. They're one of my favorite things to get quotes from every week.
Yes. Okay, so here's the quote. We practice the art of allowing, which means reaching for the thought that feels best, not the thought that is the real thought, not the thought that is telling it like it is. Telling it like it is only holds you where it is. And then they say, quote, damn it, I'm going to tell it like it is. I'm going to tell it like it is because everybody wants me to tell it like it is. End quote. And then they continue on. Tell it like it is if you like it like it is.
Yes.
But if you don't like it is, then don't tell it like it is. Tell it like you want it to be. If you tell it like you want it to be long enough, you will begin to feel it like you want it to be. And when you feel it like you want it to be, it bees like you want it to be.
Yes. It's one of my favorite things is to remind myself to change the story.
Yes, it's so important. I mean, that's a great reminder of, oh, that's right. I can't keep thinking about the thing that I want. Otherwise, the thing that I really want, I'm blocking from coming.
That's right. Yeah. And you have to learn this consciously. I've never found any way to subconsciously learn this. It has to be a deliberate, intentional thing to change your mindset so that you're not going to just go with whatever's going on.
Yes. And it takes practice.
It really does take practice. Yeah. A lot of practice.
Because your brain is like, what do you mean? Don't think about what is.
But what is what? Is what is. Which is true enough. It's just not going to really help.
Yes. So it's just a great reminder, like, oh, that's right. I better stop thinking about what is and start focusing more on what I want.
You know, it's interesting that you brought that one in because the start of the first chapter, or actually the fourth chapter, the one that we're studying this week, is it touches on this in kind of a different way. It's a quote from a gentleman named Christian Larson, who lived from 1866 to 1954.
Mm.
And he wrote that a man can change himself and master his own destiny is the conclusion of every mind who is wide awake to the power of right thought. That's what right thought is.
Yes.
Right thought is picking and choosing what it is you're going to think about and focus on instead of just focusing on whatever is.
See, even way back then, they were thinking about law of attraction.
They didn't have a name for it. They still thought
That's
about
right.
it. Although, actually, I think the concept of choosing your thoughts has been around for the longest time. I also believe that the new part of it, the part that is brought to us by the Abraham Hicks folks and by The Secret and by other modern LOA teachers, is that there are consequences to thought. And that those consequences, even that is a slightly old idea, but that the consequences are directly under our own control through our choices.
Yes.
And to make the more mystical side of it, it isn't just the consequences of having thoughts and then acting on those thoughts. It's having thoughts and stuff happens off those thoughts. That's the really modern part.
Yes. Yeah, that your thoughts can turn into what happens to you.
So it's certainly important for us to focus on the right thoughts because it helps us to take the right steps. And that's a concept that Napoleon Hill talked about a lot in Think and Grow Rich. And others, you know, Dale Carnegie, others have talked about it for years too. But the new part, the really cool part, the part that's still mind-boggling to me, is it isn't just about thinking about thoughts so you can direct your own actions. It's also about thinking about the thoughts you want because stuff just happens. It comes. It arrives. It arrives in surprising and mysterious ways. And when it does, the hardest part is remembering, oh, yeah, I really did think that, didn't I? Because we don't exactly take a log of our thoughts, do we?
No, but that would be a good idea.
Yeah, right. Except we wouldn't get anything else done all day long, but still. That's the advantage that a computer has over us. It can keep a log while it's doing everything else. We can't do that so easily.
I always ask my clients, if there was an alarm that was attached to your thoughts, and every time you thought something more negative or you thought about something you don't have or the lack of something, how often would that alarm be going off?
Yeah.
That's kind of a good way that you can kind of figure out, like, oh, wow, I'm thinking way too much about what I don't want.
Well, your word alarm was quite apropos, because when I first was considering this whole thing, I was alarmed by how often my alarm went off.
Yeah.
In fact,
that's a good kind of awareness to have.
And as time goes on, I realized it was going off even more often than I originally realized.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, mm-hmm. The deeper I dug into this, the more I realized my alarm was going off most of the time.
Yeah. But that's an important awareness, because once you really are aware of that, then you can start making changes.
Yeah. Well, just being aware of it makes the change right there.
Yes.
Just being aware of it, all of a sudden, I experienced revulsion to all the different times I was feeling that kind of negative awareness and not being aware of it. And when I was aware of how many alarm bells were going off, I mean, it was an instant revulsion and an instant desire to change. It's not like I had to put my mind to it. It was more like, oh my God, this is so overwhelming. How am I going to do this?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh my God, that alarm you're talking about is going off all the time.
Yeah. What do I do? I mean, I can't possibly control my thoughts all those times. That was what was going through my head.
Yeah.
And actually, that's something we get to in this chapter, I believe. But
okay, good.
Yeah. But anyway, let's get back to some of the quotes, because Lisa Nichols comes on board next and gives us some really good description about this. She says, when you want to change your circumstances, you must first change your thinking. Every time you look inside your mail expecting to see a bill, guess what? It'll be there. Every day you go out dreading the bill. You're never expecting anything great. You're thinking debt. You're expecting debt. So debt must show up so you won't think you're crazy. And it's funny, I always thought it was the other way around. If debt showed up, I thought it was crazy. And every day you confirm your thought. Is debt going to be there? Yes, debt's there. Is debt going to be there? Yes, debt's there. Is debt going to be there? Yes, debt's there. Why? Because you expected debt to be there. So it showed up because the law of attraction is always being obedient to your thoughts. Do yourself a favor. Expect a check.
Yes, that's right. And I like that, because that even makes me think of my email. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, I really want there to be good news. I call them good news emails.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can mean a lot of different things for different people. But for me, I have what it means for me. So
for me, a good news email is a good news email day is when I don't get any spam email. That's a good news day.
Yeah. So a while ago, every time I would check email, I'd be like, what am I going to? And then I thought, you know, wait a minute. You can't have that vibration about email, otherwise you're going to attract the uh-oh emails.
That's right.
You got to have the, oh, I can't wait to check my email. I know there's going to be some good news emails.
Yeah, that's a microcosm of the larger picture, isn't it?
Yes.
So expectation is a powerful, attractive force because it draws to you what you think about.
That's right.
That's pretty much it. Straightforward. James Ray jumps in next. He says, most people look at their current state of affairs and they say, this is who I am. There we are again on the same topic.
Yep.
He says, that's not who you are. That's who you were. Let's say, for instance, that you don't have enough money in your bank account, or you don't have the relationship that you wanted, or your health and your fitness aren't up to par. That's not who you are. That's the residual outcome of your past thoughts and actions. So we're constantly living in this residual, if you will, of the thoughts and actions we've taken in the past. When you look at your current state of affairs and define yourself by that, then you doom yourself to have nothing more than the same in the future.
Yeah.
That's a good way to look at it. I mean, sometimes we get despairing about stuff that's going on presently.
That's right.
And
that's right.
If we can remember that, well, that isn't because of what I'm thinking right now. That's what I thought before.
Yeah.
So by changing what I'm thinking right now, I'm going to change the experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of helpful.
Yes. And I still like the last quote you read about expectation, because that's important too.
Oh, yeah.
Like how strong do you feel that sense of expectation about something you want to manifest?
Yeah, expectation is like anything else. It works both ways. But you want to, if you're expecting the thing that you really do desire, it's powerful.
Yeah, like you just want to feel so certain that something that you want is going to manifest for you. That kind of becomes your dominant thought. That feeling certain about it over, like, well, I don't know, maybe it'll come. I don't know. You see, you have to do that feel certain thing as much as possible.
So toward that end, our gurus and the secrets say, essentially, if you're having a little struggle trying to figure out how to do this, start with gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcy Shimoff says, gratitude is absolutely the way to bring more into your life. Dr. Joe Vitale says, what can you do right now to begin to turn your life around? The very first thing is to start making a list of things to be grateful for.
Yes.
It shifts your energy and starts to shift your thinking, which is a good thing. If you feel like you're stuck, that's the use of gratitude, I think. If you're feeling like you're stuck, it's a way of getting yourself off being stuck.
Yes. Yes, because the minute you go into things you're grateful for, first of all, true to law of attraction, suddenly more things come into your mind, like about what you're grateful for.
And James,
and it's good.
Oh, go ahead.
No, say it's good to be, just go back. Like, I like to just go back as long ago as I can, and I just ask myself, what am I grateful for? And I just try to do like a timeline, and it's just so much fun. By the time you're done with it, you're just in such a vibration of gratitude. It just feels really good.
James Ray has a slightly different way of doing it. He doesn't go back to stuff in the past that he's grateful for. He is grateful for his present. So when he wakes up in the morning, he gets up and says, thank you. Every morning when his feet hit the floor, he says, thank you. And then he starts running through what he's grateful for as he's brushing his teeth. And then he's doing things in the morning. And he's not just thinking about them and doing some rote routine. He's putting it out there and feeling the feelings of the gratitude that go along with it. That's a key point, too,
yeah.
Isn't it? You have to feel
yes.
it. You can't just mouth yes. the words.
Yes.
Because if you just mouth the words, it could mean you don't really feel it. And so you're basically lying to yourself.
Yeah, actually, a good thing that helps with that is, like, sometimes I pick a day, and every time I do something, I'm like, I'm so excited I get to do this. Like, you know, like you said, if you brush your teeth, I'm so excited I get to brush my teeth. I'm so excited I get to take the train.
I have to admit, I have trouble getting excited about brushing my teeth. So maybe that's not the best example for me. But
but if you practice it, though, it helps. Like, it just kind of helps you. It just makes you become more aware, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm still here, and I still get to brush my teeth, and I still get to eat breakfast, and I still get to exercise, and it just kind of puts you in a nice gratitude place.
Yeah, for me, I don't even focus on things like brushing my teeth. I focus on, I'm still breathing.
Well,
I'm still
absolutely.
Here. Yes. I'm still here. My yes. journey isn't done yet.
That's right.
This is a good thing. Yeah, for me, that's the really big thing. Focusing on all of the great stuff that we get to do here. I mean, I remember one time Abraham Hicks answered a question from their audience about why it was that, this is not what the question was, but it was like the gist of it, why it is that being on Earth is so great, because it seemed to that person it was terrible being on Earth. They'd rather be dead. And the response that Abraham Hicks came back with was, well, the difference is that when you're alive, you get to eat food and it's delicious. You get to breathe clean air and enjoy the sun
yeah.
on your skin. You get
yeah.
to feel the rain as it gently touches on your skin when you're walking in a fine rain. You get to enjoy climbing a mountain or swimming in the sea. You get
yeah.
to enjoy color. You get to enjoy flavor, sounds, taste, touch. Those are all the reasons why it's so wonderful to be alive.
Absolutely, yep.
And interestingly enough, by focusing on those things, we are focusing on... Guess what? We're focusing on the now. We're just focusing
yep.
it on a different way. We're focusing on what is. We're just choosing to focus on different stuff that is.
And from a place of gratitude.
Because what the tip, when we say that we focus on what is, when that's the objection that's raised, what we usually mean is, without saying it, I'm going to focus on what is, and it ain't so hot.
Yeah.
And all
yeah.
I can see is what ain't so hot.
Yeah.
I had an interesting conversation with my sister-in-law about this. I think I told you about her. Ioana has been pursuing a PhD in neuroscience, neurobiology.
Mm-hmm.
And she has done a lot of research into what we might call the positive psychology side of neuroscience. In the course of those studies, a few of the things that she has discovered and dug up reinforce the things that we're talking about here. So, for instance, there is a piece of our brain. It's at the brainstem. I can't remember what it's called. But it's a filtering mechanism. And literally what it does is our human experience basically inundates us with sensory input. If we didn't have a filtering mechanism, we would be autistic. That's what autism is. Autism is having all this sensory information coming in, but you can't filter out the stuff you don't want to focus on. And so it's just too much. It's too much input. And that's why you see the face of an autistic person who hasn't been encouraged to help, you know, deal with their situation and so forth. They have like this look on their face of, oh, they're stuck there because they're just constantly overloaded. Well, this thing in the back of our brain is a filtering mechanism that filters out all but the stuff that is in most alignment with what we've been mostly recently thinking and feeling about, and especially with stuff that we've been trained to think about for our lifetimes. That's where the strongest filters are. So that's how it is we end up as human beings in places where some of us are focusing on negative all the time.
Yeah.
Because we have trained that portion of our brain to focus on negative.
Yeah.
The cool thing is that we can train it to focus on anything we want to, but it takes deliberate effort.
Yes. And time and practice.
Yeah. Yep. And once we do, the brain actually molds itself to start expecting to see other stuff and to stop expecting to see certain stuff just because of what we choose.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yes, and it's great that it can change.
Yeah. Yeah, it's reassuring, right?
Yeah.
Because it means you're not locked in for the rest of your life to really bad stuff happening, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's really great. That's good news. So here's an example of science. Science may not buy into the law of attraction yet. There's probably going to be quite a few years before it does. But it's how science is already in some way reaffirming what is taught by the law of attraction. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So continuing with this chapter on powerful processes, we get to, well, first of all, they spend a lot of time on gratitude. Lee Brower, you may remember, tells the story about the rock. Remember the story of the rock?
I don't. What's the rock story?
It was the gratitude rock.
Yeah.
He was traveling. He's a kind of a life coach like you are, and an author.
Right.
And he was traveling in Africa, I believe it was, South Africa.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And he went up to a river and found this really nice rock, and he liked it. He liked how smooth it was and so forth. He says, you know, I'm going to take this, I'm going to stick it in my pocket, and every time I touch this rock, I'm going to think of something that I'm grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
So every morning, when he gets up in the morning, he picks it up off his dresser, puts it in his pocket, and goes through the things that he's grateful for. And at night, what does he do? He empties his pocket, and there it is again. He says, I've had some amazing experiences with this idea. A guy from South Africa saw me drop it, and he asked, what is that? I explained it to him, and he started calling it a gratitude rock. 2 weeks later, I got an email from him. There's your email. In South Africa, and he said, my son is dying from a rare disease. It's a type of hepatitis. Would you please send me 3 gratitude rocks? Well, they were just ordinary rocks I found off the street.
he gave them a purpose. Yeah.
I said, sure. I had to make sure that the rocks were very special, so I went out to the stream, picked out the right rocks, and sent them off to him. 4 or 5 months later, I get an email from him. He said, my son's better. He's doing terrific. And he said, but you need to know something. We've sold over 1,000 rocks at $10 a piece as gratitude rocks. If we've raised all this money for charity, thank you very much.
Oh, my God.
So some charity got $10,000 worth of gratitude rocks.
Well, there's a new business idea for us.
Well, more likely a fundraising idea. It's probably not something that you're going to get be able to make business off of, be able to make money off of, but it is possibly a way to raise money for something else because it's the idea that you're sharing. The idea is what makes it worthwhile.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, it could be a rock that you have. It could be a stuffed animal you have that you look at every day. But I like that idea of giving it that purpose, giving something that purpose to remind you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important. Now, the next part of this chapter starts to get into a section that quantum physicists sometimes have a lot of trouble with, because she invokes the name of Albert Einstein. And the way she invokes it is a bit controversial, to say the least, because I don't know that anybody's ever verified this, but let me read it to you. It says,
okay.
The great scientist Albert Einstein revolutionized the way we view time, space, and gravity. That's true. From his poor background and poor beginnings, you would have thought it impossible for him to achieve all that he did, but Einstein knew a great deal of the secret, and he said thank you hundreds of times each day. I don't know that he did that, did he? Maybe he did.
I don't know. That would be great if he did.
But what she says is, he thanked all the great scientists who had preceded him for their contributions, which had enabled him to learn and achieve even more in his work, and eventually become one of the greatest scientists who has ever lived. I mean, if he actually did that, that's something that we should find out about. I've been trying to dig into some of the literature about him and so forth, and I haven't found anything yet. So I don't know if this is something that she made up or something that she found somebody else made up. But if he really did that, that would be very cool. It would also be a bit of a wake-up call for the quantum physicists who doubt all this stuff. Which I'm sure is why she included it. But I think we have to categorize that one as unverified, at least for the moment.
But it sounds good, though. I like it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy, if that one's true. I mean, it's certainly worth digging into it to see if you can find the source, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he put himself in that vibration of being a successful scientist so much, then look what happened.
And we do know famous scientists and scientists, yeah. Scientists and inventors, that's what you get when you combine scientist and inventor all into one word.
That's right.
Yeah. the person I was thinking of when I said that was Thomas Edison, because he was both.
Mm-hmm.
He was mainly an inventor, but he was also a bit of a scientist, too. And
yeah.
Edison really, I don't know that he ever expressed it in something kind of similar to what The Secret expresses it, but he certainly lived it. He kept expecting when he was building his light bulb, when he was trying to invent the light bulb, he kept expecting he was going to invent the light bulb. And he did against some enormous what is experience that was telling him over and over and over again, you're not going to invent the electric light bulb.
Yep.
I mean, according to the myth, I don't know if this is really true. I've heard references that suggest it's true. But according to the myth, he had 10,000 light bulb failures before he finally got one that stayed lit.
Wow.
And it was because
I believe that.
He was trying all these different filaments, all these different materials to use as filaments.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, after having tried almost every filament he could think of, he was saying to himself, why isn't this working? Why isn't this working? And he finally hypothesized that there was air inside the light bulb that was burning out the filament. So he said, I got to get the air out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And once he basically introduced a vacuum into the light bulb, all of a sudden it stayed lit. But it took a lot of failures to get there.
I mean, look at the way, you know, with flight, how flight started.
You know?
Then eventually it morphed into commercial airline, but all the different steps before that were pretty amazing.
There's a classic cliche from that era. If man were meant to fly, he'd have wings.
Well,
I mean, that's
or
resistance.
Something that has wings.
but the point is, there's a clear sense of resistance right there. The belief was it couldn't be done.
That's right.
Cannot fly. And then when the Wright brothers and others simultaneously all demonstrated that it was possible to sustain yourself in the air, that was kind of mind-blowing for the people at that time.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool. Like, you could take like almost any invention, and at some point someone thought, ooh, they got that inspiration to think, ooh, I wonder if this could happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And just on that belief and that there we go with expectation again.
And Rhonda Byrne lists some of them. She lists the Wright brothers. She lists George Eastman in film, Edison in the light bulb, Alexander Graham Bell in the telephone.
Yes.
I mean, you're right. There are a lot of inventions that demonstrate this kind of transition in thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. It all started with a thought.
That's right. It also applies in the world of sports in a big way. I guess the classic example that Joel and I talked about a lot was Roger Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile in 1950, early 50s. I can't remember what year it was. It was before I was born, fortunately. But no, at the time, it was there were actually people who said it has been scientifically proven that the human animal cannot run a mile in less than 4 minutes. And it turned out, of course, to be just a mental limitation, a resistance point in the human mind, because not only did he break the 4 minute mile, but within a year, about 10 other people broke the 4 minute mile too. So all of a sudden, this impossible thing wasn't so impossible anymore.
That's right.
And once people thought it wasn't impossible, and they thought it started to think it was possible, then all of a sudden they could start doing it.
Yes.
I mean, there are so many examples in American sports, in the worlds of football and baseball and basketball, so many things that could never be done, records that could never be broken, and they ended up being broken. The one that comes to my mind is Babe Ruth's home run record. For the longest time, people said no one's going to break that, and then Hank Aaron obliterated it. I mean, it wasn't even like close. He hit like 40 more home runs than Babe Ruth ever hit. It's like, whoa.
I remember even reading an interview with Barbara Streisand, and they asked, well, how do you hold a note for so long, and how do you hit a note, a high note, and how do you do this, and how do you do that? And she said, because I want to.
Yeah.
And that's so
And what's implied in there is I don't buy into the idea that I can't do it.
Exactly.
I only buy into the idea that I can do it, and that I am doing it, and that I will do it.
That's right.
Makes all the difference, just that one little piece of belief.
That's right. And just the idea, whether it's that or the wonderful inventions, that somewhere along the line someone said, I want to and I think I can.
So it's time to bring in your favorite guy, Michael Bernard Beckwith.
Okay.
He says, now that feeling and that inner seeing will begin to be an open doorway through which the power of the universe will begin to express. So essentially the idea that as we focus on these things, there is a spiritual power that comes to us and through us that makes all this stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it is when we are focusing on what we want rather than what we don't want, we're not just setting ourselves up to take the right steps. We're actually marshaling forces we can't even see.
Yes.
Now, this is pretty spiritual stuff. This is pretty metaphysical.
Yes. And it does tie in, though, with Esther Hicks and Abraham, because I just recently...
Well, they're pretty metaphysical, too.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I just listened to one of her recordings from an expo that she did, and that's what she said, that we rely too much on what we see, and there's all this stuff going on the unseen that we have to rely on more than we realize.
Yeah, this is what Mike Dooley talks about when he talks about taking baby steps. He says, we actually have brains that are too small to see the whole path. But we're not expected to. All we're expected to do is to pick a direction and do whatever little things we can do to go in that direction, trusting and knowing that big multiplier effect will kick in because universal spiritual powers will kick in along with it.
That's right. Which goes back to what we talked about last time, that we can't get caught up in the how.
Yes.
That the how, something's going to happen.
Right. Yes, it's not about the how, it's about the what.
Yes.
And
that expectation and that trust.
Yes, it's very, very important. And the thing that is encouraging there is that there is this power that exists, and that it is essentially the power that creates the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's what created everything that already has been. Because if you think about it, there's a whole lot that was created way beyond what humankind did.
Yeah.
And again, very metaphysical here. Some people would say it touches on religion. I don't really see it that way, but some people would say that, and I respect them.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple fact is, so much happens that has its own energy behind it, and that energy can all be traced back to thought somewhere.
Yes.
We may not even know who the thinker was, other than it was just part of us, so to speak. Because in a sense, in a spiritual sense, we're all part of the same ether, if you will. We're the ether bunnies.
that's funny, yes.
So, yeah. This is where the secret can be pretty intimidating for somebody who has their own beliefs and perhaps limiting beliefs regarding their own religious beliefs, regarding their own ideas of spirituality. Maybe they're atheistic. Maybe they're agnostic. They don't really believe that any of this stuff can exist at all anyway. Mm-hmm. When you're dead, you're dead. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, that's what the Law of Attraction and the Secret really does teach us. And it can be a bit of a challenge, regardless of whether you come from the atheistic viewpoint or you come from a deeply religious viewpoint. You know, maybe you're deeply Christian or deeply Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist or whatever. I mean, Buddhists, maybe you're going to find it a little bit easier, but even among Buddhists, it can be a little bit challenging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it shows that this whole concept has a long way to go before it gains massive acceptance.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, we can get there. It's just a question of people choose to make the choice. Choose to make the choice. How about that?
Yes, especially when someone first hears about it and they kind of resonate with it, like, oh, that kind of sounds right, but they haven't necessarily experienced it in this new way. So they could be like, well, what do you mean how that happens? What do you mean this? What do you mean that?
Yeah, it's the resonance.
It's
the resonance that means that we're going to be likely as a human population to make the shift over time. Because the resonance is what's going to draw everybody in. The real question is, how long are people going to hold out?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, I don't mean like they're being, you know, defrauded or guns being held to their head. I mean, how long are they going to resist the idea? So, because it's been an interesting thing, right? The Secret did really well as a film and as a book too. I believe the number I heard is that it made Rhonda Byrne $300 million. That's a pretty successful run, but that's still only a small percentage of the overall world population.
Yeah, that's true.
So it achieved a breakthrough. It got a significant number of people interested in it, and yet it's a very small percentage of the overall population. If I had to guess, it's probably on the order of like 3 to 5%, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right to you?
Possibly, yeah. But I do think it's getting more popular and more accepted, though.
Yeah, I think inevitably it will. And it does have an advantage that other new ideas don't have. It is based on positivity.
Yes.
Which means there's going to be less resistance over time.
Mm-hmm.
Not that people can't find out ways to resist it, because they will, and they do. I know from experience. I do it myself. But but the fact is, because it's so positively oriented, that's going to be like the lubrication that gets it through faster. You know, that's going to be the factor that allows it to move more quickly and to spread more easily.
Yes.
Because there's no resistance in positivity. That's what makes it positive. Positivity is positive because there isn't any resistance involved. Negativity is where all the resistance is.
Yes.
Which was another concept early on that gave me a little trouble, and I keep coming back to it as a way to remind myself what resistance means. What is that? What is this thing that we call resistance? And resistance is literally resisting the idea, like not being willing to go with it.
Yes. Or how I like to explain it is like all the fear, the worry, the doubt whatever it is that you want to attract.
Yeah. Any negative feeling is the resistance.
Yes.
That's the word. I said negatives before. It's not just negatives. It's negative feelings.
Mm-hmm.
The negative feelings are where the resistance is. You can think of a negative thought. I can think the word no. And there isn't a whole lot of resistance in there. There's like a tiny amount, but there's not a whole lot of resistance in there. But if I start feeling no, there's a huge amount of resistance in there.
Yeah, it goes back to that. If that's your dominant thought, like is no and all those.
And your dominant feeling.
Thoughts, more your dominant thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, the feeling is the accelerant, if you will.
Yes, for sure.
It's the thing that really makes it jump. So, it's pretty big stuff. I like to bring in Jack Canfield because he was actually one of the first people who I believed when I first saw the movie. Because, you know, you come into it with ideas about, okay, how much can you trust these people that you've never heard of before? But Canfield I'd heard of before because he was the author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. Yeah. So, okay, he at least had some credibility in my mind. And plus, there's something about him. Maybe it's the white hair. Maybe it's the smile. But he just seems he seems more real than other people. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He just you just believe this is what he's actually believing. You don't believe it doesn't. You don't feel like you're being conned in any way. You know, sometimes people tell you good stuff.
When you first see it, you're like, "Who are these people?"
Yeah, never heard of any of these people. You heard of Michael, but I never even heard of him. But Canfield, I heard of, and so he had some credibility with me. And he just you could tell when he was telling his story, he wasn't holding anything back. This is like this is just what I experienced.
Yeah,
you know, and you can take it or leave it. It's no skin off my nose if you don't buy into what I'm telling you. I'm just sharing my story. And that makes it more believable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I liked him so much. Anyway, here's what he had to say. He said, decide what you want. Believe you can have it. Believe you deserve it. And believe it's possible for you. And then close your eyes every day for several minutes and visualize having what you already want. That's an interesting phrase. Having what you already want.
Yes.
Feeling the feelings of already having it. Come out of that and focus on what you're grateful for already and really enjoy it. Then go into your day and release it to the universe and trust that the universe will figure out how to manifest it.
Yes.
That's a really deep quote because there's a lot of expressions there, you know, wordings and so forth that are quite different from what we're used to, beginning with that one phrase, visualize having what you already want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We think of it the other way around. Visualize wanting what you already have. That's easy for us to get.
Yeah.
Visualizing having what you already want. That's got a lot of twists and turns to it.
Yes, even before that, when he says believe, like, I think that's where a lot of people get hung up is like, how much do you really believe that you can have this, whatever it is they want?
Well, for me, I mean, right.
I think people kind of believe it. Well, I think I can have whatever, $1 million, but are they really believing it? How strongly do they really believe it? Do they really feel that?
I think you're right. And I think, honestly, they realize at some deep level that their belief level isn't real strong.
Yeah.
But that's the reason I like this other phrase. This other phrase about visualizing having what you already want. That's a way of getting around into the root of whatever that thing is blocking you from your own belief.
Yes, and doing that exercise he talked about will for sure help you feel that you could have, feel/believe that you could have whatever it is that you're wanting. If you really do that exercise he talks about.
So when you hear that phrase, visualize having what you already want, what does that mean to you?
Well, that means putting yourself in the vibration of already having it. So if there's, I don't know, a particular car that you want, and you do that exercise he talks about where you visualize yourself in that car and on the road and how good it feels and how wonderful the interior looks and, you know, as much detail as possible, and you spend some time doing that, it's going to put you in the vibration of having that car. And then you're going to feel it more and believe it more that you could have it.
It does mean those things. It also means something else to me because of the strangeness of the phrase, visualizing having what you already want. It's a recognition that you previously expressed a want for it.
Yeah.
It's not like you're creating a new want here. It's not like you're creating a new desire. It's a recognition that you've had this desire all along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the way to understand and appreciate that desire in the most positive way is to visualize that you have it. So you have what you already want.
Yes, because just thinking about something you want is good, but when you visualize that you already have it and what it's like to already have it, then it brings it to a different level.
And then feeling the feelings of already having it is the way that you apply the juice to that, so to speak.
Yes, yes. It's a very similar process to Abraham's 68-second process, where you spend at least 68 seconds focusing on whatever it is you want as if you already have it.
Yeah, if I remember it's 17 seconds to get the whole process started, and then 68 seconds to really ramp it up.
Yeah, they say it takes 17 seconds to shift a vibration.
Yeah.
And 68 seconds to shift the manifestation.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's probably a better way of saying
that. That's why they want you to spend at least 68 seconds, which really, that's easy to do. It's even better to spend more than 68 seconds, but a minimum of 68 seconds.
The funny thing is, that would have been really difficult about 25 years ago, because unless you wore a stopwatch, you know, or not stopwatch, a regular wristwatch, you probably would have trouble figuring out, okay, have I been holding this for 68 seconds on this thought?
Yeah.
But now we got smartphones that can read out the time to us, you know?
But 68 seconds goes by so fast, and usually...
Well, not at first it doesn't. The first time you try this, it seems to last forever. Because you're trying so hard to stay on that one thought and not be distracted.
Yes, but with my clients, so when I describe the 68-second process, I say, pretend we haven't talked in a year, and whatever it is that you want to manifest has already happened, and you're just, we meet again unexpectedly, and you're telling me about it.
That's
so
good.
Like, oh my God, David, we haven't talked in a while, but I've been in the most amazing relationship, and it's been so amazing because of this reason and that reason, just to give them that feeling like that it's already happened for them.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that because it's easy to tell a story. We're all we're not all good storytellers necessarily, but we all have the ability to tell a story in our own way, even if it's a feeble way. We can at least do it, and we can do it over a period of time.
That's right.
And that's how you're getting through the 68 seconds. If you're not telling a story, though, if you're just trying to focus on something without telling a story, that's where it gets difficult. So your idea...
Yeah, do it like you're telling a story.
Your idea of telling it as if we hadn't seen each other for a while, that's really cool, because that encourages us to think about it in terms of a story rather than a thing to be focused on.
That's right. That's right. And it's good, like, whatever it is you want to manifest, make a list of what your life would be like after you manifest it. And then you can use that list to do what either Jack was talking about or the 68-second process, just kind of help you with your story.
Yeah, because really, the first time that I tried to mess around with lists like that, I was feeling like I was in a stuck zone.
Mm-hmm.
But the last part you said, that's what ultimately made the difference for me. That's where I made the shift. When I realized it wasn't just about making the list, it was about incorporating the list into my life story and telling that story to myself.
Yeah.
And if I could get my nerve up to actually tell that story to somebody else somewhere along the line, but at least telling it to myself.
Yeah. Once you do it and you're done with your 68 seconds or however long you did it, you're like, oh, wow, that really did feel like I have whatever it is that I wanted.
Yeah,
it really does. It really works at putting you in the vibration of feeling like you already have whatever it is.
Right, because the longer that we do it, the more we put ourselves in that place. That's
exactly
the same thing that happens when we watch a play or we watch a movie. What do they call it? The suspension of disbelief? That's what they call it in the movie industry, right? You want the audience to suspend their disbelief. If you can get the audience to suspend their disbelief, they're going to love the movie and you're going to have a hit. That's their goal. Well.
Right.
It's also the goal of somebody practicing the law of attraction. You want to suspend your disbelief. And
that's
so the whole purpose of that list that you're talking about, or those lists, is to give yourself stuff to work with so you can tell your story to yourself in such a way that you can begin to suspend your own disbelief.
That's right.
If you can suspend that disbelief, then all of a sudden it starts to feel real. And when it starts to feel real, that's when, like you said, it feels like it's really going to happen.
Yeah, and we can't be in belief and disbelief at the same time. So when you're spending those few minutes in belief of what you want, it's powerful. Like, you can really feel, when you're done with it, you feel like, oh, I guess I can have that car I want.
Well, unfortunately, we can multitask. So we can zip back and forth between belief, disbelief, disbelief, belief, belief, disbelief. We can unfortunately do that. What we're trying to avoid doing is exactly that.
Yeah.
We're trying to stick on just the positive side, on just the side of belief. And that takes a bit of discipline. It takes a bit of, you know, concentration, practice.
To me, it goes back to practice. Like, a lot of times people ask, well, how often should I practice what we talk about?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, how much do you want to attract what you want?
Yeah, right.
And they're like, oh, okay, I get it.
Like, how much free time do you have in the day? Okay, that's how much you should practice.
Yeah, like, sometimes I ask people, how often in the course of a day do you actually focus on what you want in a 24-hour day? And they're like, oh my God, maybe just like a few minutes. And that's also eye-opening. Like, wow, I have 24 hours in a day. I need to spend more time thinking about what I want.
What we end up having to do, I think, is getting ourselves into a mindset of any time we notice we're working on something, whether it's at work, at home, working with kids, you know, working with your spouse, whatever it might be, maybe just being out with friends or you know, building something or doing a project or whatever. Whenever we're doing this stuff that we do every day, and we notice, because we've been starting to pay attention, we start to notice little shifts where we're on a negative track, what Abraham Hicks calls the negative spiral or the negative disc, the low-flying disc. I always found that one a little bit weird, but that's another subject. Whenever you find yourself doing that, that's the opportunity to start changing the story around, to do what they call the pivot.
Yeah.
To pivot it around from here's what I'm stuck on to here's what I want it to be.
Yep.
And to start telling that story to yourself, to think that story. So an example might be, I have been on a computer, because a lot of people get frustrated by computers. And I like computers, but even I get frustrated by them sometimes because I work with them all day long. Okay,
right.
So I'm on the computer, and well, I can give you an example from this past week. This past week with my wife's business, we shifted from QuickBooks for desktop to QuickBooks Online, what they sometimes call QuickBooks in the cloud, right?
Right.
So basically it's all on a website somewhere that we're trusting that Intuit, the company, will actually keep secure. And,
right.
Which in and of itself is going to be enough to give any of us a little bit of a heebie-jeebie, like, are my records secure? So you're not off to a good start there. And then you dive into it and you find that the way they built the web version is significantly different from the way they built the desktop version. And stuff that you used to be able to do, you can't even do. Which gets very frustrating, you know?
I'm sure.
So you're into this for a while, and you're trying to find your way. Why can't I even make an invoice anymore? And where did they put the employees? And where did they put the customers? I can't find them. And and then you realize, oh, that's one of those negative spiral thingies. That's not so good. Mm-hmm. How can I turn this crazy monster beast around? Well, maybe I got to stop calling it a monster beast. That might
there
be the
go.
First thing to do.
Yep.
What else can I do? Well, the cool things that this software is going to do, maybe I should be focusing a little bit more on those. Like, for instance, QuickBooks Online actually does most of the work of balancing my checkbook for me, which I really didn't like doing on the desktop side. But on the online side, it does it for me. Like, oh, well, that's pretty good. You know, it's changing the mindset that way. Deciding to focus on different aspects of the thing that you're working on. So even though I'm working on something that is, I can choose what part of the is to look at.
That's true. Yes. Yes.
And so we don't have to just wait during our day through our days for those periods of time where we have free time to do some visualizing. We can actually do it as part of our day.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes.
And I would argue that's even when it's the most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when we're shifting our negative discs, our negative vibrations, our negative spirals, whatever, into positives.
Right, and having all that time to practice doing that.
Yeah, while we're doing the work.
Yeah.
It's whistling while you work. I think the seven dwarfs actually were onto something.
That's true, because they kept themselves at a high vibration by whistling, because it was fun.
They did, yeah. They saw work as fun, and incidentally, that's what I have found happens when I do a lot of pivoting throughout the day. When I make myself be aware and then find ways to pivot. And I have to admit, I'm like anybody else. There are times when I just can't find a way to pivot. So I wait five minutes for something else so I can find something to pivot to. But the point is, I'm constantly trying to find a way to pivot to the positive side. And when you do that long enough, I'm finding that stuff that I have found to be really awful work or dull or boring or whatever actually gets better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
It actually feels better, and which is kind of annoying because I've been bitching about it for so long. But nevertheless, it gets better, you know?
Well, in general, when we deliberately keep ourselves at a higher vibration, in general, it does make things seem easier and better than compared to before.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, things start to smooth out. Another project that I had this week, I've actually been working on this for the past few weeks, again, for my wife's business. Up until now in her business, everything has been done manually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we would use QuickBooks to put out the invoices so that we're doing that on the computer, and we'd use computers to send emails, but that was about it. The rest of it was all a manual process, all the scheduling, all the estimating and tracking of hours of the employees. It was all being done manually. And you can imagine just how much time and effort that takes, and it's expensive in terms of you know, how much you're paying people and so forth. Well, we just now are shifting over to an online system where people can use their smartphones to punch in their hours as they're doing work, you know, so they clock in, they clock out, and it's timing it for them, all that kind of thing, and it's feeding it into a system that's going to help us create the invoices, and it's going to do, it's already helped us with the scheduling. My wife is like many people, she was resistant to the whole thing because she's so used to doing it the way she'd always done it. And as I sat down with her and showed her how the scheduling worked, we got stuff onto the schedule, and then she says, okay, now what do we do? And I said, well, we're done. And she said, what? What do you mean we're done? Scheduling takes hours and hours. No, actually it doesn't. Not anymore.
That's right.
High five time, you know? So that's the kind of thing that happens. When you're focusing on positives and you're determined on seeing positives and seeing progress, then the progress shows up and it's like, oh, wow, that's great.
Yep.
That is so good. Yep. Oh, my God, I'm going to get my life back.
Yes, that's right.
So
now, I just remembered something, getting back to, like, what Jack said in that 68-second process where you practice, like, putting yourself in the vibration of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I once, when I was looking for my house, I used to get on my cell phone and pretend I was calling my best friend and letting her know that I found the perfect house that I've been looking for and why it was so perfect and how easy the closing was. And I did attract that. So
now the question that many people want to know is, how long did it happen? How long did you have to do that before it happened?
Just a few months, really. But I'm saying it was fun just to, like, get on my phone and pretend call my best friend and saying, like, oh, my God, we found the house. It's exactly what we want. It's in the right price range, and it's in a quiet neighborhood, and it has this aspect and this aspect, and we're just so happy living there. Like, I just go into as much as I can think about how it all, as if it already happened.
You didn't allow yourself to think, well, that's really weird. You actually treated it as something fun to do.
Oh, absolutely. Right. No, I didn't think it was weird because I knew why I was doing it. Because I knew, okay, let me really put myself in the vibration of attracting this house that I want.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do it kind of like a 68-second process, but I'm going to do it like I'm talking to my friend on the phone.
A lot more than 68 seconds. You were doing pretty extensive messaging from what it sounds like.
Yeah, but we all are on our cell phones, so we all know how it feels to talk to someone on our cell phone.
Right.
So you can just, you know, pretend you're calling your best friend, and you're telling them how wonderful it is that you manifested whatever it is you manifested and why it's so wonderful, and that'll put you in the vibration of it.
And here's a really good trick. If you have a best friend who you really can trust to let you do things a little bit differently and won't make fun of you and so forth, make the actual call. Don't just fake it.
If you have a friend you could do that with, absolutely.
It's probably 10 times more
powerful. They can support you, because then their role will just be supporting you. I'm continuing to tell why it's so amazing that you attracted it.
Now, if it's somebody who's going to tear you down in 5,000 different ways for doing it, you don't want to make that call.
No.
No.
No way.
But if you can get somebody who you're close to agree that they're going to be supportive and positive about it and then do it.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, for sure.
I mean, that can shift your attitude and your set point up the emotional scale, like 5 or 6 points in a single setting.
Oh, yeah.
It's really dramatic how much it shifts.
Yes.
It's possible to go from the depressed section to the highest happiness section in one session by doing that.
Yes, for sure.
Not that that'll happen every time, but it's possible. You know, people want to know how to make fast progress. There's a way to make fast progress.
Yeah, and if you have a friend that will do that with you, that would be amazing.
Louise and I do that. Not as often as we would like to, but we do that. And we did it last night, actually. We just call it having a conversation. But what we mean by it is having a positive conversation and focusing on good stuff.
Yeah.
And when we do that, it doesn't matter what kind of day we've had. By the end of it, we're feeling really good. And usually, because it is also a way of relieving and releasing resistance, if we're doing it at night, after about 45 minutes of it, we're ready to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Which is weird. But nevertheless, it's also very powerful and positive because it means we're going to sleep well that night.
Yes. Yes. And it's always nice to go to sleep in a higher vibration.
It's also nice to recognize when you're going to sleep. This is something else I picked up from Abraham Hicks very recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to realize when you go to sleep that you are actively putting the law of attraction to rest for a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're basically switching off. Because it's not like the law of attraction is continuing to go after your thoughts while you're sleeping. Your sleep period is a period of just shutting down.
Right.
And
right.
The really cool part is when you wake up, you actually have an opportunity to do something that's not so easy to do during the regular day, which is picking your set point, your emotional set point to start at.
Yeah.
So you could go to bed feeling miserable. And if you can, as you go to bed, say to yourself, okay, I'm shutting down for the day. I don't even have to think about this stuff anymore. I can just relax and go to sleep and get my rest, knowing that when I wake up, I can pick a higher set point than when I went to bed if I want to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can. It really does work. You really can choose that higher point. Now, if you've been dealing with a lot of negative crap, I can promise you one of the first things that's going to happen as soon as you become conscious is that you're going to be aware of that crap. So you have to make the conscious choice. Oh, yeah, I just woke up. I want to change my emotional set point. And you have to stop that stuff and say, what am I grateful for? What do I appreciate in my life? What's good? I love this bed I'm in. It's so comfortable. I had a great night's sleep. I've got a house to live in, for goodness sake. How many people don't have a house to live in? I have great food. I've got clothing on my back. Things are actually pretty good. And you run through this stuff like that. And that starts your day off much better than the way you ended the previous day.
Yes. And even if you said you are in a phase where there's a lot of stuff going on that isn't pleasant, even if you raise yourself a little bit, that's better than staying where you were.
And the reason it's better is?
Because you brought yourself up a touch vibrationally, and any movement up vibrationally is better than where you were.
It creates an avalanche effect.
Yes.
Just by taking the little bit of a movement like that, you encourage more movement like that. In ways that you don't necessarily even have to concentrate on. It just kind of comes along with it as part of the ride.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
So we're toward the end of this chapter. Let's look at the secret summaries for this chapter.
Okay.
Expectation is a powerful, attractive force. So you expect the things you want and don't expect the things you don't want, unless you really want to get them. Gratitude is a powerful process for shifting your energy and bringing more of what you want into your life. That's what we were just talking about. So be grateful for what you already have, and you will attract more good things. Giving thanks for what you want in advance turbocharges your desires and sends a more powerful signal out into the universe. That's that avalanche thing we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Visualization is the process of creating pictures in your mind. I actually skipped over that part in the book, but they do start talking about visualizing what you want. And, some people do the vision boards and things like that. And that when you visualize, that's what Roger Bannister did when he broke the 4-minute mile. He was visualizing breaking the 4-minute mile, and he was visualizing what that run would be like, and he did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then to use the law of attraction to your advantage, make it a habitual way of being, not just a one-time event. So at the end of every day, for instance, before you go to sleep, go back to the events of the day. Any events or moments that were not what you wanted, replay them in your mind the way you wanted them to go.
Mm-hmm,
change
the
story.
Yes, I like that.
And that was a tough one at first. So a little quick way, because we're down to a minute and a half here. Quick way to shift it around is to do what Louise and I call the three gratitudes. And that's where you find three good things that happened during the day and talk about those things. And that shifts your whole mental thought process as you're going to sleep from a negative zone to a positive zone.
Definitely.
So there's a real simple solution.
Yeah.
So let's remind everybody where they can find us. Obviously, they can find us right here on PRN, but they can also find us at the website, loatoday.net. In fact, you can subscribe to the podcast there. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find David at – David, what's your website again?
Sure. You can find my website, lifecoachdavid.com.
So you can find us all over the place. So find us and stick with us. And David, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Yes, have a wonderful rest of your weekend and your time.
You do the same thing. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.